Hafaday, and welcome to today's edition of Hearts of Harvest.
Let me give you some truths, calming truths, that'll help you.
That was Pastor Marty Heron, the pastor of Harvest Baptist Church, and our speaker for Heart of Harvest, a daily program brought to you by Harvest Ministries on the island of Guam. Our prayer is that as you listen to these lessons, you will understand the heart of harvest, and that these messages from the Word of God will help you to develop a heart for God. Today, Pastor Heron continues our study of the life of Christ, and specifically as he examines the I Am statements in the book of John. Today, we turn to John 14 and study Christ's proclamation, I am the way, the truth, and the life.
7% of those that have tried to conquer the English Channel swimming from one side to the other 26 miles, only 7% ever made it. A girl named Florence May Chadwick actually, was the first woman to swim across the English Channel and then swim a few months later back across the other side. She grew up in San Diego and at the age of 6 started her prowess in swimming. At the age of 11 won her first meet in long distance, what they called rough water swimming. This was a specialty item in which individuals that were swimmers would use their abilities in endurance. What caught my attention about this lady at the time, I believe she was 30 or so, at 34 in 1952, she being from San Diego decided to swim from Catalina Island to the shoreline of California. Growing up in California, as my brother and I did, we had been to Catalina before. And so she stepped out in the early morning of 1952. I don't know the exact month to it, but she began the swim to California. She was not the first woman to do so, but she was the one that worked very hard. She had already had a name for all of these different swims that she had done. What caught my attention was that in those kind of swimming conditions, there are a tremendous amount of pressures against them, as it was in the English Channel. In this case, there were oil slicks, there were kelp beds, there were jellyfish, ice-cold water. There were, in many occasions, sunburn to deal with, chafing with a swimsuit, as well as sharks. In her case, she, Florence May, began the swim, and 15 hours into the swim, she had, during this whole swim, been going through a fog bank to add on top of everything else going. And as she reached the 15-hour mark, she leaned up, and her mother and her trainer was in one boat among other boats that were kind of trying to give her some protection from the sharks particularly. She leaned up at her mother and said, I cannot do it. And her mother gave some encouraging words, and Florence Chadwick went on for another hour and exhausted, said, I can't do this. She got pulled into the boat. The fog is what was the real problem. Because she got into the boat, the swim was over, it was nullified, and she realized that she was less than a half a mile from the shoreline of California. And when I read her little story, I again realized that for most in the Christian race, whatever race it may be, the spiritual race that Paul so often referred Christians to, the fog we live in, among everything else in our little endurance of race, is what normally gets to us. So if I can put all that as a backdrop, that is somewhat what you have going on in John 13 and 14. And I want to look at that with you because this is the sixth of the I Ams that we've been studying. When he made this statement, I'm the way, the truth, and life, it goes way beyond a verse in the Romans Road that you can show people about him being the way of salvation. It does include that, but it's even more than that. He wasn't talking to the unsaved masses at this point. He wasn't talking about purely just salvation in the sense of I'm going to witness about myself to people like I'm the resurrection and the life that he vocally said to a group of people when he called out to Lazarus, come out of the tomb. This was a small, secluded time in which he himself was with the 11 other disciples. It was quiet, it was secluded, they had just got done with their meal. In John 13, he had just went down as a leader and got a bowl of water and began washing the feet of the disciples. Unheard of. That doesn't happen. The slave does it before you ever walk in to the room. He knows it's within an hour of walking out of the upper room, down out of the streets of Jerusalem, down through the gate, John 15 and 16. He's there in the vineyards. Well, it's kind of a vineyard. Then John 18, he shows himself there in the garden. And so these are the last words. So he finds himself in all of that in John 13. Look, if you would, the only phrase in verse 30 out of all the Gospels that Jesus makes this words about washing the feet and preparing for his betrayal, and Judas is filled with Satan and Satan takes him over. In verse 30, he said about Judas, Judas, then having received the sop, went immediately out, and these four English words, and it was night. I guess that's why I like the song, No More Night. But in this time, it was night. Here's these disciples, and in that backdrop, Jesus began helping them to know that as a loving friend, he knows the turmoil, the trouble, the testing these disciples are already feeling, the words that he's giving to them. And he's not now just giving facts about the trouble just ahead of them. But in addition to that, he's trying to calm their hearts as well. And it is no different for their hearts at that time than it is for ours today. Times were fragile right here. They thought that Judas was taken off to take care of some financial dealings. And in those words, I would encourage you to put yourself into that same context. Because I'm going to tell you, in this day and age, just the other day, somebody said to me, Pastor, I don't think I can ever remember a time that it seems things are so fragile. I mean, and I thought, you know what? I think he's right. I mean, I'm not that old. But the reality is, it's not like there's a lot of security. I mean, financially, for our own world, not just our country. The wars that are rumors of wars that have always been the case, but continue to be the case, including a few countries like our own North Korea that genuinely need the gospel and find themselves. I just think I'm going to launch a little missile to find out if I can put a warhead, a nuke on that baby. Iran and their ongoing escalation connected with Russia, that they are very clear about it. We're going to wipe Israel off the map, including families today that I've seen under more attack than almost any other time, an unsettledness, a turmoil. This is the context you find the disciples, and the facts were, and the thoughts that were troubling their heart produced fear. There was a sense of abandonment. Let me give these to you, and if you're taking notes, I'd encourage you to do so. You find this in John 13. This is what Jesus said. In verse 31 of chapter 13, therefore, when he was gone out, Jesus said, now's the Son of Man glorified. God's glorified in him. And if God be glorified in him, God will also glorify him to himself. And he's going to straightway glorify him. He's going to be lifted up. He's going to be above anything and everything else. He's trying to let them know this is a whole nother time. And then he says, so tenderly, my little children. I noticed very quickly there was a sense of abandonment that they, as the disciples, were going. He says, verse 33, yet a little while, I'm with you. You're going to seek me. And I said unto the Jews, whether I go, you cannot come. So I'm saying to you, you can't come where I'm coming. And they began hearing these words and thinking, where is he talking about going? He's leaving us after all of this, 3+ years, and I've spent every day with you, and you're leaving. Where are you going? And they felt a sense of abandonment, wondering abruptly, and unfortunately, you end up finding this sense where, I don't understand what he's saying. He ties in the theme you'll find throughout his whole last words, a new commandment I'm giving unto you, that you love one another, as I loved you, that you love one another. He knows, hey, I'm not going to be here. These 11 are going to be the foundation of what we would know later to be the church, and there's got to be a genuine sense of love unlike any other world religion ever offered. Verse 35, by this shall all men know that you're my disciples if you have what? Love one to another. You also sense in verse 36 through 7 and 8 where Simon Peter said to him, well, Lord, whether you're going to go? Jesus answered, whether I go, you cannot follow me now, but you're going to after be able to follow me. Peter said to him, well, Lord, why can't I follow you now? Where you got to go? You got to go out and go drop to the next street down the road? You going over to Bethany where we had just come from? Where are you going? I'm going to go with you. Jesus on a whole other platform of thinking. When Peter said, I'm going to lay down my life for you, Jesus said, as you know, the verse 38, were you going to lay down my life for my sake? I'm telling you, the cock's going to not crow till you have denied me three times. In other words, by the morning, you're going to deny me. You know what that says to me? There is a great sense of betrayal here. The disciples heard it. They're thinking, what in the world's going on here? Jesus is leaving. Here's Peter, the voice box for all of us, the loudmouth, type A. If he's saying it, I guess we're all doing it. I mean, he's the one everybody, hey, jump out of the boat. He's already walking on water. And he's now being told by the Lord, who's never wrong, you're going to deny me. You don't think that's unsettling? And on top of all of it, you have, in addition, a sense of anxious confusion. And this is what he ends up making the statement in chapter 14, verse 1, let not your heart be troubled. Why did he say that? There was this anxious, unsettled, the same trouble, the same word for this that you find back when Jesus, it was said of him, that verse 21 of chapter 13, he was troubled in spirit. There was this unsettled, deep, horrifying feeling of what's coming. And he knew the disciples were feeling the same sense about it all. And the facts he didn't try and change, he couldn't change that. He knew all of it was necessary that he himself was going to go through, picking up the cup of suffering, representing symbolically all of the pain that I'm going to take. The whole world's going to be placed on my shoulders. And then you find that Jesus now, as the leader, the ultimate leader, because he knew everything was out of place. Have you ever felt that? Well, on a bigger scale, that's basically what these disciples are feeling like, because there's nothing in place right now. You as a Christian, you're not going to feel settled here in this world. Jesus is not in his place. He's going to be on the throne. Satan, who's the great thief and the great liar, he's not ultimately going to be in his place, which is a bottomless pit. The bride, the church, you and me are not going to be in our ultimate place, which we ultimately are going to be with Christ, worshiping him in heaven. None of that is in its place right now. And so for the disciples, having this whole sense that it puts us in a place, and when we look at our world, Jesus is trying to say to the disciples, now listen, this is your world right now. Let me give you some truths, calming truths, that'll help you. And on that basis, he gives these truths. There are four of them. Notice very simply, he gives these powerful, calming truths that are so needed today. Number one, he says in chapter 14, verse 1, that the personal faith in a personal God brings personal strength. This is how he said it. Let not your heart be troubled. He says, you believe in God, then believe in me. The very simple verb, the present imperative with the sense of keep on believing in God. If you're believing on me, then you believe on God. And the disciples had trusted Jesus to put them in the boat of salvation. He's saying, now listen, no matter what's coming at you, no matter how cold that water is, no matter how many jellyfish sting you, no matter how many sharks are coming at you, you be settled. I'm right there. I will give you these words. You don't need to be anxious. You don't need to be concerned. This is not the world you're living for. You're living for another world. You believe in me, then you can believe in my Father.
Thank you for listening in to today's message with Pastor Marty Heron on Heart of Harvest. This daily program is brought to you by Harvest Ministries, located on the island of Guam. If you'd like more information or a copy of today's message, you can always write to Heart of Harvest, P.O. Box 23189, Barragata, Guam 96921. That's Heart of Harvest, P.O. Box 23189, Barragata, Guam 96921, or call area code 671-477-6341. That number once again, 671-477-6341. You can always visit our website at hbcguam.net, where you'll find a podcast of today's program. That's hbcguam.net. Thank you for listening in, and be sure to join us at this same time tomorrow for the next edition of Heart of Harvest.